Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
The philosophical question that we face is, are they still the Oakland Raiders? At what point have they stopped being the Oakland Raiders? They will no longer be. Hello and welcome to the Slate Political Gabfest for December 26, 2019, the Oakland Conundrum Edition. We're looking out at an audience that seems progressive, but not unrealistically progressive. An audience filled with people who work in technology, but not in the bro-y, terrible technology. They work in social justice, but not in the commie kind of social justice. And they're people who are definitely willing to build some housing, but not willing to sell the whole city out for developers. In short, we're in Oakland, California. The GabFest is live at the Fox Theater in the heart of downtown Oakland. There may be no there, but there are a lot of you here. I'm David Plotz of Atlas Obscura. On my left is Emily Bazelon, of course. Just as Reggie Jackson made his name with the Oakland A's, then went on to legendary fame in New York with the Yankees, so Emily Bazelon made her bones as a dogged reporter for the Tri-Valley Herald, covering San Ramon.
And spent the whole time wishing I was working for the Oakland Tribune.
And has now gone to great fame in New York City. And on her left, a man who is a walking conundrum himself. How can anyone be so smart and so kind and so handsome? John Dickerson of CBS's 60 Minutes.
You forgot humble.
On this special edition of the GabFest, we're going to tackle some of the world's most pressing conundrums. We're going to have personal conundrums. So would you rather be exceptional at one thing, but awful at everything else, or just pretty good at everything? And we'll have social and political conundrums, such as, would you prefer to have Donald Trump as your president or as your father? And later we'll be joined by a special guest. You know him from Mythbusters, Adam Savage. And then we will tackle conundrums from this very audience for our own special Slate Plus segment. So let us get started. You have to swap places with a main character from any book. Who do you swap with?
You want to start?
No, I want you to start.
Okay. So just think how much better Hamlet would have gone if Ophelia had a sunny disposition. And it just kind of like got it together, rolled with the punches, decided to have a sort of normal response and didn't turn into a waif, a really depressed waif who then floated away.
The question wasn't, which character would you like to give Prozac to?
No, but I want to swap and then fix things.
Do you want to hang out with that? He's so moody. He's so moody. I'm going to fix him.
Yeah.
He's not going to be depressed. I'm totally going to fix him.
Yes.
I feel like I could. I thought of this question as a challenge. Like, which story would it really help to fix this story? And so I really feel like I could inhabit Ophelia and make it come out better. I'm so much more reasonable and kind of balanced than she is. I mean, I don't want to be the Ophelia in the book. And then I was thinking about Lady Macbeth, another character. You could really go somewhere. Things would be so much better if these particular...
You could do laundry with her.
Exactly. I could fix that damn spot. Take it out.
But would that be a good play if at the end... You know, he's just like, let's get married.
I didn't feel that was the premise of the question. It was like, which real serious dilemma?
If we get to hijack the premise of the question, I'm going to approach this evening differently.
John, who would you switch places with?
Oh, no, wait. You say switch places with or hang out with?
Swap. You get you, to... Oh, you get to be the main character.
Oh, because hang out with would be Ford Prefect. Because, now, he always knew where his towel was. Two people got that reference. Nick, I would like to be Nick Charles in The Thin Man. Because he could disarm a man of his revolver and never spill his martini.
That's good.
That's good, David.
I think, I've always had a crush on Lizzie Bennet from Pride and Prejudice. So I think I would like to be Mr. Darcy because I would be rich.
And have a you great, still I'd get
have,
the girl.
I'd have Pemberley, and I get to end up with Lizzie Bennet, which would be awesome.
All right, that's a good one. Although I do feel like in the end, of course, you're going to pick someone who has superpowers, right? I mean, you are the most honest in that. You wouldn't really want to be like Lyra in His Dark Materials or Princess Leia. I know that's not a book. Or Hermione Granger or whatever great character from Lord of the Rings, which is always your go-to. Of course you would. If you could do magic, wouldn't you want to go do magic?
I don't think so. No.
Oh, really? I totally would.
I'd rather be. I would want to be Aragorn, who can't do much. Really,
please, can you not? Can you just not do any Lord of the Rings tonight?
She brought it up. I opened the door. I'm sorry.
She brought it up. I didn't bring it up. I didn't. You asked me. I didn't even. It's not even mentioned
What's
here.
What's the name of the dragon? Maybe you could be the dragon.
No.
Smog.
Yeah. That's how I feel right now. No. All right, Emily, give us another one.
Okay. If you could mind meld with your pet for just one question and answer, what would the question be? Note, we are stealing this from Clara Jeffries' Twitter feed because it's too good to pass up as a conundrum. Thank you, Clara.
Well, the obvious question for the dog would be, who's a good boy?
So I have a couple of cats, and one of the cats really likes to eat earwax. And so I would like to ask the cat, like, what's up with that? Why are you eating earwax? What's so good about the earwax?
I feel like they would just say that it tastes good to them. What else would they offer you?
What would you ask your pet? You don't have a pet, do you?
I don't have a pet. I used to have a dog, and my dog, he made me feel that being left alone was like a betrayal and tragedy. So I want to ask him, like, could you be left alone? Is there any time of day, any point at which it's okay to leave you alone in the house? Maybe it's not so bad. Maybe once I'm gone, the howling stops.
Which is also true with parenting.
Which animal, if it could speak and you could talk to it, would be most annoying?
I mean, the birds that have really little voices, like the Tweety Bird kind of voices, I don't want to talk to those birds. What do you think? I hate Tweety Bird.
You mean
birds.
Sound annoying or actually be annoying?
Both. I feel like both qualities.
Huh.
You know, Teddy Roosevelt had a super high voice, although he might have actually been annoying too. But I guess where I started with that sentence was the highness of the voice isn't necessarily proof of an inner annoyingness, but then I realized I couldn't really follow it all the way through with Roosevelt.
I think dogs would be so annoying because they'd be like, are you mad at me? Are you mad? No, you're mad at me, aren't you? Are you mad at me?
See, this is...
Is
an important...
I'm your friend. Don't worry. I'm here. I love you.
You guys have such a jaundiced view. The dog would be like, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you.
Yeah,
love you.
Exactly.
That would be unbearable. One note.
Because it would always be sincere. It would, each time, it would come with the fresh propulsion of sincerity.
There are some dog lovers in the audience.
What would yours? What do you think would most annoying animal?
I mean, this is such a boring answer, but hyenas, obviously.
Because they'd be laughing all the time.
They'd be laughing, and the jokes wouldn't be funny. Yeah. They would be. It would be nervous laughter. It would make every situation unsettling.
Remember, we used to have that colleague who had that laugh. It would be like that.
Oh, my God. It was like a report from a cannon. You'd be trying to do your work, and this laugh would emerge, and it was really destabilizing.
That would be the hyena.
David, resurrection or reincarnation? Not what do you believe, but which would you prefer? I feel like I asked this question in a previous life.
All right, so okay, the advantage of... the advantage of resurrection is you know you get to come back as a person. You're pretty clear you get to come back. You get to come back as yourself, and you know what that is. On the other hand, it would be so boring to live your life over and over and over
and
over again.
But if it was a different time, maybe it's not living it over again.
But do you know you're yourself? Is it like Groundhog Day where you're like, oh no, here I am again.
Ready to make the same mistakes, disappoint the same set of people.
Reincarnation would be each time.
I think it's different.
I think reincarnation would be so fun because you would get all these different experiences. It'd be great to be a cockroach it would only be 14 days.
I guess I want to know if you keep getting to be reincarnated, because then I definitely want to be reincarnated.
Right, I assume you
absolutely
keep getting to do it.
Yeah, then, I mean, both that you get more bites at the apple, so to speak, but also that you get to take on all these different forms.
John?
I'm very conflicted here.
Your church has a good history with resurrection.
Are you answering as the good Catholic
that
you are?
Well, yeah, but man, what you got to go through. And then no one believes you.
But then people worship you for a really long time.
Yes. Well, that does die. That is appealing. Well, it all depends on whether you know it or not, right? Because I may have already made the decision. Boom.
I didn't think that. But that doesn't tell us what you would prefer.
Well, but when I don't know. I was trying to throw the metaphysical long ball there. I don't know. I guess reincarnation.
All right.
Actually meant resurrection. I got so flustered with thinking.
Okay, here's one. We'll do this one as an audience poll, too, I think. Would you prefer to have Donald Trump as your president or your father? First will be president, second will be father. Would you prefer to have Donald Trump as your president? Would you prefer to have Donald Trump as your father?
Yeah. So, that's interesting. So now, when I was looking at this question, I thought, okay, so if it's my father, then he's not the president. And so basically, I see that audience response as one that's taking it for the team.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting.
And I posed this in the cocktail before the show to a couple of listeners, and one of them pointed out something also good, which is that you'd also be rich. So that would be cool.
Are you,
somebody chipping? Somebody in the audience said maybe.
Does it matter if you're Ivanka or Tiffany or one of the boys?
Well, you, I guess, would be get to be Ivanka or Tiffany.
Right. I mean, it's a different experience.
John has one of those Trumps has a hair that's
careful,
not unlike John's.
Careful.
I would pick him as father. You would definitely take it for the team. Definitely.
But then I'm not sure.
Would you enjoy golf?
Love it. It would be great.
Yeah, yeah, golf, warm weather.
I cheat at golf, too, so no. it'd be perfect.
God. Get right in. And you're also the one who's the most approving of, you know, general corruption, bribery scandals, just like greasing the palm. That's an advantage in this family.
And you could give all the money away, to the extent that
it
exists.
And then have your charity closed down.
No, I'm saying, no, run it, run the charity legit.
Properly.
Do
like
it legit.
My reenacting of Ophelia, but
yeah,
even
exactly.
Less plausible.
Exactly. You could, right, exactly.
Got one?
Okay, if you believe there's a God who answers our prayers and influences our lives, what would it take to convince you that such a God does not exist? And if you don't believe God exists, what would it take to convince you that God does exist?
I do not believe in God, and it would take so little to convince me that God exists.
So you're right on the edge.
Yeah, it's like, all right, God, if you exist, you wouldn't even have to put like $1 million. Put a $1 bill in my hand right now.
Oh, come on, you want some supernatural event? That seems like a big ask, actually. God has better things to do than be putting something in your palm.
But if he's so good at everything, it seems like that would be pretty easy.
Huh. That's what you're looking for. If only dollar bills were easier to... Okay.
Wow. Does it have to be your God now, John?
My God is a God of love and forgiveness.
What about you, Emily?
Well, I do believe in God. I don't think about the answering our prayers part. That's not at least my kind of Jewish interpretation of God. But I believe in God. And
I don't think it would take that much to convince me that God doesn't exist, because I have a kind of prime mover relatively. And my main...
Wait, it wouldn't take much to convince you that God doesn't exist?
Does not. Well, no,
it
actually...
That doesn't make sense. Why does that make sense?
Well, because mostly...
How do you prove the negative?
My main feeling about my attachment to the idea that God exists is just the world is so complicated and beautiful and terrible and all these things that don't feel rational to me. Like, how could there not have been some spark of creative, unexplained energy in the beginning of it? And if scientists were able to really explain how life began, I feel like maybe I would have to admit that I was wrong about that.
I feel like they've done a pretty good job with that already, but okay.
I'm saved by my lack of understanding of such science that you're talking about. What about you?
I thought we were getting into the heavy stuff later.
This was on the first page.
I know.
I didn't cheat.
I know. You're a first page determinist. Given that there is so much suffering in the world that goes unanswered, and so many people have so much and don't do anything with it to ameliorate that suffering, that's a despite the consistent prayers of all of us who pray for an improvement in that situation, is a pretty strong argument that those prayers are meaningless. And yet,
John makes the turn.
Yeah, and yet all the joy and love and beauty and hope that still exists in the world is the reason that that hasn't changed my view about God. So I guess it's the strongest argument I can think of, and I haven't succumbed to it yet.
I think it does make a lot of sense to be easily convinced in one direction or the other, right? I mean, we don't have proof, obviously, but it seems like a big thing to rule out. Like, it's hard to eliminate it, but maybe you don't feel that way.
No, I think it's hard to, I think you cannot prove the non-existence of God. I think it would be very easy for God to prove God's own existence.
And God doesn't bother.
God
so
doesn't
that
bother.
Makes
yeah.
you skeptical. Yeah.
So, John, give us a conundrum.
Would you, David Plotz, rather be locked up or hunted for sport?
We really like this question.
I like this question a lot. Okay. We'll do this as an audience poll, so start thinking. I really am claustrophobic. I really, really hate to be inside. And I'm assuming that it is, am I locked up for life? Is this I have a life sentence?
I think whatever the period that you're hunted for sport would be the equivalent period that you're locked up. Like, you have to think of it as not
no.
being
probably
like
I'd only survive
minutes.
Like an hour yeah. being hunted for sport.
If you're hunted for sport for like 2 years, you get tired.
Depends what they're hunting with. And where are we in the...
Well, can you give me parameters?
Yeah. Okay, you're in jail. Let's make it like 20 years.
Okay.
Or hunted for sport where you, if you make it to the end of the field of play, you're free.
20 years.
20 years versus like an hour?
Well, it depends how fast you go and whether they get you with the arrow within the first five minutes.
I'm thinking.
I assume, by the way, when you're hunted for sport, don't you figure it'll be with like range weapons that aren't, like it won't be rifles.
It's definitely the Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think, all right, 20 years is tough. If you'd said like 50 years, I would definitely take hunted for sport. And if you'd said 5 years, I would definitely take being locked up. So 20 years is a hard number. I think I would take hunted for sport. I really do not want to be. I don't want to be locked up.
Well, and then of course the question is, what kind of hunted for sport? You know, I mean, do you get a big lead? Were you running in sand and all the rest?
But are there tigers
the most dangerous
and lions
game
chasing
is man.
You?
No, they're people.
Men,
people are chasing me. Yeah.
Right.
What about you?
Oh, I also tend to be claustrophobic, and the idea of being locked up makes me really antsy. But thinking it through, I think the more rational answer is to take being locked up. I always imagine being like kidnapped and, you know, really held in some terrible set of conditions, in which case absolutely I'd rather run around, even if the lions are going to eat me in the end.
I don't like being with other people much. So can we make it 25? No, I don't know. A period of contemplative time would be kind of
you
nice.
You could think of it as like being in a monastery.
Yeah, exactly.
Or a meditation
right, exactly.
For a while.
Let's do this as an audience poll. So first we'll ask if you'd rather be locked up. Second, if you'd rather be hunted for sport. Would you rather be locked up? Would you rather be hunted for sport? Wow.
Because you choose the more active
answer. Some of those people sounded like they wanted to do the hunting.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming only on Hulu.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
On to the second segment, our social segment. Here we go.
How do you tell your best friend that the person he introduced to you as the love of his or her life, their wife, is actually a disaster waiting to happen?
Oh my God. This is such a terrible
Dilemma. Have you actually had this happen ever?
I had a friend this happened to with a sibling, that the sibling's spouse, so prospective spouse, was somebody that this my friend thought was unacceptable, disastrous, and he said something to his sibling and destroyed their relationship.
I think and, you can't ever say anything for that reason.
Yeah. I think we don't know the mysteries of the heart wants what it wants.
And yet, if you really believe that and you think there's some chance of fending it off, it would be so hard to be quiet. And also, is the person asking for your opinion? So I know someone who this happened to.
But you know when they're asking for your opinion about that, there is one answer they want.
I guess that's right.
And that is to be hunted for sport.
so to speak.
But here's the question, could you wiggle, is there a back door to doing this, which is that if it's not about the qualities of the person they've introduced as the love of their life, but it's about the qualities of your brother or your friend. In other words, is their selection of this person demonstrative of a weakness that they have that about which they should be...
That seems like an elaborate ruse, which would be a better, more diplomatic way to go about it, but perhaps not convincing in the end.
Yeah, well, I specialize in elaborate ruses. Okay, well, then no. Stay quiet.
So we all think you have to stay quiet.
All right, I'm going to phrase this pejoratively. Is there anyone out there who thinks you should not stay quiet?
So speak up.
There's a group that thinks you should speak up. I would be interested in hearing an example of how that went well, but we'll take that offline. John.
Would Bob Dylan go to Simone Biles, or would Simone Biles go to Bob Dylan? In other words, who is the coolest person in the world that everyone must actually go travel to pay homage to? David, you have specific views on this question.
Well, I think it depends on cultural context and who you are. I think the Obamas, not at all. I think the Obamas were that for a period. I think in sort of 2008 to 2010, there was this way in which anyone, the Obamas just like crooked a little finger, everyone would show up. Now, is there anyone who fits that bill? I think there, Beyonce maybe?
Beyonce is definitely the answer to this question.
And what is the context of this meeting? Is it to go see her in concert, or is it to go...
No. She wants to talk to you. Like, is there any way that she would come to you? No, there is not. There's no one who Beyonce has to go to, except maybe her mom. That's it.
Right.
Everybody comes to see Beyonce.
But do you think there's anyone that has to go to... that Bob Dylan has to go see? I think the problem with Bob Dylan is Bob Dylan's like, fuck it, I don't care, right?
He wouldn't. Yeah, he's kind of misanthropic.
Yeah, but...
And Simone Biles has to go see Beyonce. Huh. And Bob Dylan does, too. I think everybody has to go to see Beyonce.
Interesting. John, do you agree with that?
What does Bob have to do? Because
he has to go see Beyonce.
He has to go to Beyonce. Like, if there's a question of who is going to make the move, who's going to make the overture, be slightly inconvenienced, who is it?
I think he would go see her, maybe by peeking through her keyhole down upon his knees.
That was a little questionable, actually, that answer.
Sorry, no, it's a one person.
I got it.
Okay.
That song is actually, I think, about that.
Obama.
Obama?
Would Obama go see Beyonce and Jay-Z went to see Obama. I remember
that.
Yeah,
I think that's true. But I don't know.
Today. Probably today.
Right.
The Obamas would be like, oh, can we please go visit Beyonce?
What about the Pope? Does the Pope ever go? That feels
Do you think
like
the Pope would go see
go
Beyonce?
To the Pope. I guess maybe perhaps not, but his loss, man.
Huh.
Not to be dissing the Pope or anything.
No, you don't have to. You don't have to worry about him.
Okay.
You can. He's chill. He forgives.
That's true. He just seems.
What's the most awkward professional setting to have to extricate yourself from?
Ooh.
I have a specific answer for this. I'll start with my
specific answer.
Oh, yes, that would be good.
My specific answer is you may have had that experience of being on a video conference call where you're on a video conference call and you forget that you're on the video conference call and you start to do things that you definitely should not do when other people are looking at you, like picking your nose, like texting other people,
I think the examples have been exhausting.
The examples are... There are other examples, and that is a bad situation because you cannot. There's no good way to explain why you're doing that. That's very awkward.
That's bad. That's really bad. What about? There's also the problem of I was thinking more of like a social situation where like everyone's drinking and you're uncomfortable. There's something going on that's like more out of work that feels like you don't want to be. What if the person sitting next to you is watching something they shouldn't be watching and you have to get away?
Here's one that I was recently a part of, which is you're in a small meeting setting and the person sitting next to you has fallen dead asleep.
Oh.
And their particular way of falling asleep, they escalate the snoring. So they're going to get busted soon.
So this has really happened to you? That's never happened to me.
Yeah, so...
John works at CBS.
That was not the context. That was not the context. But here's the conundrum. Do you wake them?
Yes.
And
100%.
Yeah, but what if you wake them and they flail about? Then you put them in a position because they could just kind of drift through the rest of the meeting.
Maybe you try to really gently nudge them and hope that will. That is a bad one though.
That was.
I was once teaching a class with someone who fell asleep, not the person I currently teach with, and it was really I have never been so mortified. I was so worried.
You fell asleep while they were teaching?
Yeah.
My daughter goes to Yale. It's just like I'm paying a lot of tuition for that.
We make sure the students get a
lot
for their money.
So wait, how did this happen? Was it in the first part of the second? And then they fell asleep while they were...
Well, when you're co-teaching with someone, the other person and the students can be taking up a lot of oxygen in the room, and you can kind of fade out.
That's
the thing that happens.
You were so uninteresting.
Yes, exactly.
That's not...
But then I saw the other... I saw the students notice, and I got really uncomfortable. It was, upsetting.
Emily, you are made an absolute monarch of a nation sometime between the years 1350 and 1650, but retain all of your modern knowledge and values. Do you keep being a king or queen? Or, this is very fluid between 1350 and 1650, or do you propose that the society abandon the monarchy and shift to a representative democracy?
So, does this question evoke for anyone else the Monty Python skit in which King Arthur shows up and like says, "I'm your king," and they're like, "No, you're not. They're a workers' collective.
We're an autonomous workers' collective."
Thank you. Yes, exactly.
Now you see the abuses inherent in the system.
Exactly. So I think that it would be a mistake to imagine, especially in 1350, that people were ready to take on democracy. I mean, we're barely ready now. So I think you have to build up your civic institutions first and make sure that you have some strong in between, because otherwise the whole thing can fall apart and be even worse than continuing with your monarchy. I would be a benevolent
monarch.
What would
you start with? What would you start? Would you start,
I would be a benevolent
monarch. Would you start with a justice system? Would you
Cersei.
What did Queen Elizabeth do? She did a really good job of this. What did Queen Elizabeth do? She encouraged Shakespeare. That was very helpful. I feel like she did other things too. She collected taxes well. Did she build up other in-between civic institutions?
John, would you install democracy?
As we know from the attempts to install democracy in illiberal countries, sometimes there's tissue rejection. And so would you, as a single monarch, have the ability to line everybody up? Plus, once you get a little taste of power, it's hard to give it up.
Right, and there are all these things you could suddenly fix. You could put people on a path to democracy, but I don't think just walking away from your rulership responsibilities would be the right move.
I think we saw this movie. What's the Hilary Mantel book about Thomas Cromwell?
The trilogy.
Wolf Hall.
Yeah.
That Cromwell is like this person who is trying to put he's a modern character who's put back in the time of Henry VIII, and so he's trying to bring modern customs, modern economy, modern religious tolerance. So that's his mechanism. So that's what you would try to do within the framework of an absolute monarchy.
So here's the question. What, Emily, given all of your modern knowledge and so forth, would you introduce first to the citizenry?
Right. Let's see. I think you need people of different religious persuasions to get along with each other, right? You need less tribalism. So you need some interfaith council. Seriously.
First, let's convene a meeting.
Yeah. You get them to stop hating and killing each other. And I think that's actually super important.
Interfaith
but
council.
But wouldn't you have some piece of knowledge that would seem like magic to them in 1350, and therefore if you could roll that out at the beginning, people would think you are that much more magical, and therefore you'd have even more power to convene your meeting at which everyone's going to nap.
All right, so let's see. Could you introduce some basic due process?
I'm talking about some whiz-bang thing we've learned about
toilets.
Physics.
What?
Yes, like, indoor plumbing.
Plumbing. You think that's the route to democracy? Because everyone, like, you turn the lights on and everyone feels better, and then they have the leisure time to start worrying about voting?
The human soul is through the stomach, one way or the other.
All right, well, let's audience poll this one. If you were an absent monarch, would you bring democracy, or would you continue to be an absolutist ruler? We'll start with bring democracy. Would you bring democracy to those benighted people? Would you remain an absolute ruler?
Wow. That was more resounding than I would have thought. A lot of democracy skeptics. Maybe if we'd asked this question a few years ago, we would have gotten a more balanced response.
Emily, do you want to do one?
This one I think sort of relates to the last question. Would you rather be in charge of deciding the substance of society's laws or the procedures by which those laws are enforced?
Ooh, that's deep.
Wait, the procedures by which they're made or enforced?
This says enforced. You can reinterpret it if you want.
Would you rather be Article 1 or Article 2? Would you rather be the president or Congress?
Well, and it depends what kind of president.
Would you rather be freedom and equal protection of the laws or due process of the laws, both in the 14th Amendment?
Is there plumbing?
How do you make sure that it works and hold people accountable if it doesn't?
Yeah. Huh. What's the answer? You're the legal scholar
here. This is your
care more about substance. I mean, I think if you have terrible procedures, the substance will be worth less. But I feel like the substance is more inspiring and aspirational for people. So you start with the substance, and that makes them more likely to create the procedures. It gives them a stake in the procedures. Without the substance, the process is too arid, and so people don't value it enough.
What if you just decide, as most modern presidents have, to just basically, you can interpret the law as you choose to, but because you have the ability to enforce it, then you can use your benevolent interpretation of the law to get actually the result you want. So you have the muscle to do it, whereas before you're just trying to persuade people through the brilliance of your law setting.
I mean, I think if you're doing that to for your own short-term gain, that's not such a good idea. But are you talking about executive orders? Benevolent.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about your... Because, right, it's enforcement versus creation of the law. So I take all the bad laws that are created by that silly Article 1 legislature, and I just choose to interpret them my way. But because I have the enforcement power, people have to listen to me.
Yeah, well, it's not supposed to be how it works, well, but I'm it not, certainly but does work that way sometimes.
We were only given two options.
I see. So would I rather be the person who had the power to interpret and enforce the law? Would I rather be, right, would I rather be the executive branch or the legislative branch? This is an interesting question to ask right now, because the Supreme Court is probably on the brink of really changing how much the executive branch gets to do on its own. I mean, the executive branch really has so much power right now. So I think if you're just answering based on what, how effective you could be, you would choose the executive branch.
Yeah.
John, you have the power to go back in time and change the result of one presidential election, not 2016, not 2016. Which do you choose?
I would choose...
John has been thinking about this for... A month?
No. There are a couple, but and actually, this would be with somebody who is with more skilled would have a really more clever answer. But the election of 1876, in which Rutherford B. Hayes beats or is given the election over Tilden, Hayes the Republican, Tilden the Democrat. Tilden beats Hayes, but five states, are kind of up in the air. The 20 Democrats in those states give 20 electoral votes to, I think I've got this right, Hayes. Hayes becomes president on the promise that he will remove troops from the South. And that basically...
Reconstruction ends,
and the rights that were given to African Americans basically end there until 1965.
Right. That was my answer, except I forgot all the names and dates that John just... actually knew. So another good one, though.
Crazy. It's insane. I mean, we think we live in crazy times now.
So is it reassuring that that happened and it was terrible and the country still continued, or is it just show how really terrible things can get and people will still tolerate it?
Well, and as you know, I mean, the country continued, but there was deep and profound and, I mean, the tonnage of suffering and lost hope as a result of that is incalculable. So,
So maybe it wasn't worth it that the country continued.
Well, I guess the alternative is Civil War, 2.0. So I don't know, but I guess the point is that was this much awful, which some people can look at and say that's how much more there could be.
Right.
I mean, so yes, the country survived, but man.
It was brutal.
Emily.
I have another candidate, which is 1828, because Andrew Jackson would have been a really good president to just kick off the list. How about you?
I would pick, this is going to be a perverse one, may not be popular with this crowd. I would pick 1992. I would have had George H.W. Bush win a second term.
David's feelings about George H.W. are much like his feelings about Michael Bloomberg.
Hold on.
They're just enduring and passionate.
Hold on, he has a theory of the case.
That was the last chance to maintain a Republican Party that was an establishment Republican Party that behaved in reasonable, rational ways, and that loss, we have the hyenas here, that loss was crucial to push the Republican Party further to the right. It also... Bush's raising of taxes. He had raised taxes, and that was a reason he lost a lot of Republican support, and it made Republicans believe you could never move to raise taxes again. Wait, why are you pointing at me?
Because I want to associate and then disagree.
Okay.
I want to agree and disagree. So I agree with all that. The only thing is you have the parallel thing happening, which is Gingrich in 94, which happens completely outside of Bush. And
well, but that's in the context where Clinton's already won the election, and they have Clinton to triangulate against.
Well,
so Gingrich doesn't become the speaker that soon or in that same way.
But Gingrich's plan to take over Democratic control of the House, which has been going on for 40 years, exists and has been going on for years and years and years before
Clinton.
And is
taking advantage of these really powerful social forces, right?
And he's been attacking the system for long before even Bush
was
elected.
Taxes, guns, abortion.
But I think with a moderate presidential administration, that is slightly cooled down. It is less effective. And this Republican establishment stays robust longer in a way that would probably be healthy for the country.
Gingrich doesn't have the foil of Clinton to win in 94. Yeah, I think it's still, but I associate myself with your...
You admire the jujitsu. All right.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
Dearest Oakland, our guest has worked as an animator, graphic designer, carpenter, projectionist, film developer, television presenter, set designer, toy designer, and gallery owner. So if he cannot answer these conundrums, nobody can. Please join us in welcoming the author of Every Tool is a Hammer. You may know him as a former host of Mythbusters, Adam Savage.
Thank you. Hello, Oakland. It is so difficult to be backstage while you guys are batting around these questions. And your response to whether you'd bring representative democracy just upended my whole idea of humanity.
Maybe not in a good way.
No.
It's pretty dark.
Yeah, it is pretty dark.
Was there another question, the point of new arrival privilege, that you would like to weigh in on from the previous round?
Where you were truly feeling irrepressible.
I would first if I was zapped back in time, I'd first show them how to make a motor, and then I would bring representative democracy.
Right. Because they would bow before you going, man, motor king.
Yeah. And then I'd be like, see ya.
Yeah.
What would be the oil? What would the power source be for the motor?
I'd teach them how to make a battery out of a pile, and then I'd remember what I could about battery technology and hope that people were smarter than me.
There's a lot of ifs there.
Welcome to my life.
Adam.
Sir.
If you could swim in any liquid other than water, what liquid would you choose?
So you know that I have actually swum in a pool full of syrup.
And what was it like? Tell Miss Moore.
Okay, so there is a myth that you can swim just as fast in syrup as you can in water. The idea being that because syrup is thicker, it slows you down, but because it's thicker, it gives you more to push off of. And the myth is based on the theory that those two forces cancel each other, and thus swimming in syrup is just as fast as swimming in water. Jamie and I actually went out to the Alameda County Sheriff's Department. They let us dig 200-foot-long troughs and fill them with varying degrees of viscous syrup. We used guar gum.
And why not maple syrup? Too expensive for 200?
Way too expensive. That's literally like millions of dollars worth of maple syrup.
And
yeah.
And yet one wants it to be maple syrup, but continue.
There are crime rings in Canada hiding that much maple syrup. And I'm not kidding at all. And it's cold and feels really just as funky as you would imagine.
Could you move?
But, oh, yeah. No, they canceled each other out. Totally. I swam just as fast in syrup as I did in water. But if you gave me any liquid, I'd love to swim in honey. That would be weird.
Wait, honey?
Honey, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I hadn't thought of that.
John?
Gin? Although you'd have to fill the pool up a lot.
You keep refilling it.
Yeah.
You could cut it. You always drink gin with a mark, right? They can't tell if you cut
it. I wonder what it would be like. Do you think it would be any different from water? I mean, it would smell different. If you let it into your mouth, it would be different. But do you think it would feel different texture-wise?
I don't know. I thought you were going to say, would it be any different than Friday night?
It's thinner than water, so it would. I think it would feel very different, and you'd weigh differently in it. I think you'd sink like a stone.
Really?
I often do. Yeah.
Especially
after the third one. Yeah.
If you're in like an oil or a syrup, do you float more? Because my problem
absolutely,
with swimming.
Absolutely.
Oh, I would like that. What's the thickest thing? What's the thickest liquid? That's what I
like. Concrete?
Yeah.
The most viscous. Glass.
Thick with two C's or thick? Thank you, Oakland. No, I think it would be hard to, like, cold honey has to be about one of the thickest, most viscous
things.
It's
really hard to pour.
Yeah, exactly. Or an old bottle of liquid Prel with the pearl.
What would you do, Emily?
Well, I had my first thought about this. This is not saying good things about me. Wouldn't you be kind of interested to swim in blood and see what that's like?
You are not the only... You are not the only vampire in the room. Somebody out there, yes, when it was first asked, said blood.
I worry about the person sitting next to The other thing I thought of was milk. I think that was just like a moment of, yeah. I would be interested in that.
Blood is both. I would say, for the record,
though,
that blood is only the most minute bit actually thicker than water, so it would feel very much like swimming in water, except it would smell like iron.
That makes sense, right.
Was that ever a myth you busted, that blood is thicker than water?
No, it wasn't. It was just a fact I came across in one of my books, that blood is like 0.0135% thicker than water.
Well, so it is thicker than water.
Yeah.
Just a little bit, though.
I never understood that expression.
In Germany, there is... I don't understand the... I understand the blood part. It's like, oh, yeah, we're brothers, so we have blood and... But what's the water part?
What the hell? Yeah. Why? Who's... Yeah. Right. Who brought water into the conversation?
Well, it's just the most obvious liquid to compare. What else would you compare?
And also, everything else might be like, blood is thicker than honey. No, it's actually not.
Right,
and then
exactly.
The conversation
and
grinds
to a halt.
And it
would be confusing, and who would know the answer, really?
All right. Next one here. In 500 years, which is most likely to be a religion? Harry Potter or Star Wars?
Star Wars.
Are we at more movies? We must be. I've lost track of the Star Wars franchise entirely. I have a dim awareness that there's one like coming out right now.
But what's going to be a religion? Do you think? I mean, there's so much of Harry Potter has really entered our sense of our mythology. It's in our mythology. Star Wars is also in our mythology. Or is there some other creation of popular culture that will be a religion?
Look, I believe that Jedi is already in a recognized religion in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. But that's just because New Zealand is awesome.
Yeah. You know, that's a really
good... If you say Lord of the Rings now, I'm leaving.
Well, once you tee up New Zealand, you're pretty close. Most of what we know about the devil doesn't come from the Bible. It comes from the Inferno. So that's your point, right? So is there anything adjacent that would... And so probably Star Wars is more adjacent to an existing religion than... All right. So I'm going to agree with Star Wars.
I don't know. This is a question that neither of them are going to be a religion.
Okay.
Heretic!
Okay, you come home very tired. You're wearing a comfortable shirt. You take off your pants, brush your teeth, go to bed, wearing the shirt. In the morning, you're running late, you're feeling lazy, whatever. You wear the shirt again. Have you worn the shirt one time, two times, or three times? These are the important conundrums that you are on stage for, Adam Savage.
I'd say one time, because I'm applying the jeans rule, because I wear jeans for like 10 days at a time.
Do you take them off in between?
Probably.
So then I think, but then do you feel like you're wearing them one time just because it's 10 days in a row?
I do. I actually get like, they get familiar to me in the way they each one has its own kind of
flavor. They sort of maintain the shape of your body even when they're not attached to it anymore.
It's my favorite thing.
This is something you would not do. I don't know Adam so well, but I feel sure that of all of us on the stage, you are the least likely to actually do this.
The jeans or the shirt?
Both. All of it. Anything that involves
because I was going to ask Adam
hygiene.
So I always think that basically jeans are wearable napkins. So
completely right.
After how many days where you wear jeans and, you know, you got some hot mustard, it goes, how many days of wearing jeans, normal eating patterns, do the jeans transfer from being jeans into actually being napkins? How much food do you have to wipe on your jeans?
I'm going to replace the word napkin with shop rag and say that it's almost arbitrary when you stop wearing them, unless I'm working with something like motor oil or cooling fluid, in which case the jeans are done at the end of that day.
Okay.
I think you worn the shirt once.
I do too. And I think this is a totally okay thing to do. And we should encourage it more. And we should also realize that people just do things like this all the time and it's fine.
But if you...
You mean not bathe?
I mean, just like, yeah, not that you don't have, that we are a culture in which people are constantly showering and constantly changing clothes and constantly unnecessarily imagining that they smell bad when actually, like, it's probably fine most of the time.
So we're gonna audience.
John wants to have a word with me.
We'll audience poll this question of whether you wore the shirt once or three times. So if you think you wore the shirt or twice, I don't even know how you get twice. How would you even get twice? Okay, all right, okay. We'll do once, twice, or three times. How many people think you wore the shirt once? How many people think you wore the shirt twice? How many people think you wore the shirt three times? I literally
It even took
don't
me a minute to
it.
Understand three times. It's because you wore it to sleep, and yeah. That counts as a separate time. Okay.
No, the second time is you're wearing it in the morning.
When's the third time?
The third time is if you wear it to... So you wear it. You're wearing it now. I'm wearing the shirt. I'm going to wear it to bed, and then I'm going to keep wearing it in the morning.
Yeah. So the wearing it to bed is the second time, and wearing it in the
morning is
the
third
time.
But how do you get to two?
You just don't count the sleeping
yeah,
time.
You yeah. just feel like you kept it on the next day. Yeah.
But here's the thing. Implicit in the two is that wearing it is a daytime activity.
And yeah. It's like you're going somewhere.
Right. Right. But sleeping then that means shirts are not to be worn while you sleep. They don't even have an identity while you're sleeping, and therefore...
Night shirt. What's a night shirt?
It's yeah. a separate
it's
thing.
It's a separate thing. Yeah.
How many, yeah. yeah. Wearing of a night shirt, if you wore a night shirt during the 2 days and one night, you'd only be wearing the night shirt one night.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay.
Would you rather never be able to shout or never be able to whisper? So I feel like the proper answer to this is that it's okay to give up shouting, and like that's the more polite answer and the more socially acceptable answer. The truth is, I think I almost never whisper, honestly, really.
I am overly loud.
Me as too.
It is a thing that people in my life deal with, and I would give up shouting in a minute over
because
whisper.
You feel slightly mortified by how much you shout and how much people say that you shout.
Yeah, it just comes out, and then sometimes I see that people are shying away from the volume coming out of me, and I...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel you.
I would also like to say that I'd give up shouting, but then how would I communicate with my children?
I would definitely give up shouting, because the most effective, the people who are most terrifying are not the people who shout at you. They're the ones who, like, I'd like to see you right now. Yes, now. So a nice, low, threatening voice would
That's
be great.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for children, you know, an air horn.
Yeah. True.
Yeah!
All right. This is really a question for you, Adam. So let's say you're a basically incompetent person. Is it better for you to learn how to fix things, like fix the toilet around your house, even if you don't do it very well, or to pay professionals to fix it for you and then use your time to do what you do best and earns you the most money?
Well, I'm really biased, so this answer demonstrates all of my bias that you should learn to fix something.
And why? Why should you learn to fix something?
Because as a serial gatherer of skills, I am mediocre at everything I know how to do, I have found that it's all cross-applicable. So there's no downside to learning a new thing. What you learned while learning is applicable to everything else you'll ever learn again in your life.
And you have a richer and more fulfilling life along the way.
Indeed. Steve Martin says that at the beginning of his career, someone said to him, you will eventually use everything you've ever learned in the pursuit of your career. And like truer words have rarely been spoken.
I think I totally agree with that. And the people who think you should pay people to do these things for you, it's basically an economist view of the world, which is like we're trying to maximize efficiency. And it is more efficient for you to pay a plumber to fix your plumbing than for you to waste the time to do it. But it's kind of, I was thinking about this and I was thinking, well, would you tell somebody who can't write poetry, someone who's a plumber who wants to write poetry, don't write poetry, leave it for the poets. And it's like, no, you tell the plumber, go write poetry. You should, even if it's bad, because it will bring you something.
But you're assuming the person who can't fix things wants to learn. Like, the poet isn't, that's a poet who wants to write poetry, not a plumber who wants to write poetry, not a plumber who's like, oh my God, are you serious? I can't do this. Why are you trying to make me do this?
Right.
I feel about fixing.
But don't you, have you ever mastered something like that? And you're like, oh, I'm glad I did it. I feel so much better.
Yes.
I've done it. What a sense of accomplishment I have, even though I'm never going to apply it to writing my cool New York Times magazine stories.
That yes.
At least now I can, you know, I can now change a light bulb.
I have on very rare occasions had that experience, but I have so much more often tried to fix something, gotten incredibly frustrated and given up.
Like Ophelia in Hamlet.
Right, I guess I can't reenact Ophelia if it involves like changing a tire, fixing the toilet, anything like that.
Yeah, I'm very much in the.
What about all the appreciation you can show for someone else in your life who's good at fixing things? If you're not, I'm really good at that. I'm so in awe of people who fix things.
Please paint this fence. I wish I knew more things. Jack of all trades, master of none. I think that'd be great.
Well, you know the second half of that phrase. Though often better than a master of one.
Whoa.
Boom.
Oh, did not know that.
Well done.
That was good. Excellent. All right, we're going to do one more question here and then go to the lightning round. So this, you can pick one member of the Beatles as your ally in the zombie apocalypse. Which one do you pick?
Yeah, it's George, of course. Harrison.
George, why?
He is the most... I think he was the Beatle most attached to reality as it was. I'm basing that on nothing but my intuition and 4 seconds of thinking.
Why
about
would
it.
You want in an apocalypse the person attached to reality?
Because,
that might not be the right person.
No, you are making quick decisions that are all life and death. You want someone who is dealing with things as they are, not as they would wish them to be.
And the whole wife thing with Eric Clapton, he's got some grit from, also, John, basically in bed naked with Yoko. Like, he's not getting out of bed. The zombies are coming.
I feel like
he's
picking
already
John
a zombie.
Is super sketchy. But Paul McCartney, so chirpy, upbeat, like, entertaining at every step of the apocalyptic way.
Well, maybe he'd be serenading you while you're killing zombies.
Yeah, exactly.
Ooh, that was a good
that
one.
That could be good.
But he has some pent-up anger at always having his name being second.
But in the apocalypse, everyone's dead. He could be first, second, last, everything.
No, I'm saying you'd want him on your side because of his pent-up anger.
Yeah.
Can you ask number 4, David, I think before we move
number
on?
Number 4, okay.
What does it say that none of us brought Ringo to that conversation?
He's going to outlast them all.
Yeah, which means he could be a zombie.
This will be our last one for lightning round. Domesticated pets have now become the overlords of the earth. Would you rather be ruled by cats or dogs? John?
No, it's Adam.
This one's a softball. Because cats would be awful leaders.
Super mean.
Horrible.
Yeah, I'm scared of cats.
Look, if you die in your house, your cat's going to start eating your face right away.
Your dog would totally eat. The dog
no,
would
he's,
totally
he's
eat.
Gonna
your face.
He's going to wait a while. He's going to wait a while.
Yeah, one cat. The cat is like, oh, here's fresh meat. Good. Yeah.
There'd be order to the world,
healthy.
Though.
Like,
dogs would be chaos.
You guys have framed this totally wrong. They will both eat you. It's just the cat will enjoy it.
Dogs are just fonts of unconditional love. That's exactly what I want.
Would you want
in
that as a leader?
Oh, yes.
It would be chaotic, but much more fun.
Also, the cats are so damn indifferent, they'd be like, eh. pestilence.
And... I feel like the dogs are the late 60s and the cats are like the worst of the 1980s.
Are the cat? What country are the cats?
You mean all like parachute pants and zippers?
What country are the cats in general?
I feel like the cats are some super kleptocratic...
Singapore. No, something more authoritarian than that.
Yeah, and...
And kleptocratic. That's interesting. Corrupt and authoritarian.
Yeah, they're like, have you seen my asshole lately?
Really, your cat would be asking you, if your cat could talk, that's what he'd ask you all
and
the time.
But the dogs would be what? The dogs would be Italy. The government would fall every few minutes.
Greece.
It would just be a party.
Yeah, oh, yeah, Greece, exactly. The food would
Nigeria.
Be great. There'd be awesome wine. The light would be gorgeous. And everyone would be happy.
Are there any other animals we want to introduce into this question? Raccoons.
I think
good grief.
Rats would be great. Rats. Rats would be that would be a great
Why?
Country.
Rats would be amazing.
They wouldn't
they're
take revenge
organized,
for all the experiments.
Organized, familial. No, they're just like really organized. They're familial.
Ants?
They're really social.
Rats are great. I've had several rats as pets. They are fabulous animals.
But aren't most of the terms that describe governments and bureaucracies that go wrong related to rats?
That's just a misunderstanding, John.
Rat's nests.
The rats
rat
of Nim,
fucking.
They did a good job.
What?
Rats leaving a sinking ship, which is sensible behavior.
Not if they can't swim.
All right, we're going to do a lightning round, and then we're going to go to your audience conundrums. All right, so lightning round, super high speed, super high stakes. Here we go. Would you rather eat only fruit or only vegetables?
Vegetables.
Fruit.
Vegetables.
Audience. Fruit or vegetables? First, fruit. Vegetables.
Wow.
Wrong. Okay. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Can we negotiate over why?
No.
Star Trek.
Star Trek.
What? Star Wars?
But wait, you
just... You just said you don't even know what's going on in Star Wars.
I've lost track, but I really don't know what Star Trek... Like, barely. I have, like, watched half a Star Trek episode in my whole life. Sorry. At least I watched the first three or so Star Wars movies.
The answer is Galaxy Quest. All right. Spaghetti or lasagna?
Lasagna.
What?
Lasagna, but I don't like either of them very much.
What?
Wait, what don't you what?
I'm not really that into pasta. I'm just not. I'm sorry. Lasagna. That was a clearly safer answer, John.
It's better to be upfront about that.
Spaghetti is such a pinky.
Instead of being an impasta.
Yeah. Spaghetti, though, like, spaghetti's a drag.
Spaghetti.
Hard
spaghetti.
To make
spaghetti. Audience. First spaghetti, second pasta. Spaghetti. Lasagna. Whoa. Big lasagna.
We have found
crowd
equanimity.
In the house. Okay. This is a good one. Would you rather work in the Trump administration or in a coal mine as a coal miner? I would rather work in the Trump administration.
Coal mine.
Trump administration.
Trump administration.
Would you rather have the lights on or off if you knew the room was full of spiders?
I like spiders and on.
Wait, you like spiders?
But there's a lot
the
of spiders.
I know, that's less appealing, but still, on, definitely on, and I don't feel, this is much better for me than anything dead. I don't like dead anything, or like cockroaches, much more upsetting to me.
Snakes.
Totally, I like snakes too. Snakes and spiders are okay.
Whoa, likes snakes, dislikes pasta. That's a good dating profile.
And also, right, and infrequent showerer.
Lights on or off, John?
On. Never turning them off.
Ever.
On. I used to hate spiders, but we actually did an episode in which I had to stick my hand in a chamber with hundreds of spiders until one of them bit me, and it wasn't that bad. The bite felt like someone touched my hand for a second.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, last one. What will be the last line of your obituary?
He was survived by his wife and two children.
That's what I want the last one of mine to be, because the very last thing, I, more than anything else, I care about my children surviving me. And it would be nice if my husband survived me too, but especially my children. I feel like that's the most important thing that you could have in your obituary.
Mine is, according to a National Park Service spokesman, the cliff is clearly marked on maps. But yours are better.
That is our show for today. The GabFest is produced by Jocelyn Frank. Our researcher is Bridget Dunlap. Faith Smith managed this live event. June Thomas is the managing producer of Slate Podcast. Gabe Roth is the editorial director of Slate Podcast. Thanks to the Fox Theater. Thanks to Adam Savage. And thanks to you, our dear audience here in Oakland, California. Good night.
Hello, Slate Plus. So we're now doing a Slate Plus segment, and we're going to do some of your conundrums quickly.
The Conway marriage. That's the conundrum. Go. It is really just very hard to fathom. I can't decide if they're really just not married to each other anymore, or if they've just figured out, like, the most remarkable detente ever. I'm just, those are the choices, right?
It's super bizarre and, yeah, destabilizingly strange.
Okay.
If you could eradicate, nullify one invention from the past 50 years, what would it be?
The atomic bomb.
That's more than 50 years.
Ah, crap. Really?
You can have the hydrogen bomb.
Last 50 years.
Actually, you can't have the hydrogen bomb. That was also more than 50 years ago.
That is the right answer, though.
No. All right. We're knocking that out.
Part of me wants to say the cell phone.
I was wondering if any of us should say the internet. You people all have them. You use them all the time.
For those, I just want to point out, for those of us of a certain age.
That was just a snippet from our Slate Plus conversation. If you want to hear the whole conversation, go to slate.com/GabFestPlus to become a member today.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, this is Dahlia Lithwick, host of Slate's legal podcast, Amicus. If you're listening to this show, you might be interested in Amicus's live show that we're hosting in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, May the 14th. My colleague, Mark Joseph Stern, and I will be talking to some amazing guests, including Sherrilyn Ifill and a sitting state Supreme Court justice, all about how originalism, a relatively recently invented way of interpreting the Constitution, has taken over the Supreme Court and radically reshaped the law. It's been doctrinal rocket fuel for the conservative legal movement and facilitated the rolling back of abortion rights, the expansion of gun rights, and the obliteration of the separation of church and state. And as another wildly consequential Supreme Court term careers to its end, the court's originalists are on a tear. But there's something you can do about it, and we hope you'll join us in D.C. on May 14th to explore the possible pathways out of the current situation. Go to slate.com/amicuslive for tickets.